Good morning, honourable members of Parliament. I suggest that we get settled so that we can get started with the business of the day. Honourable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee for Higher Education and the National Assembly, Honourable Tony, and other members of the Portfolio Committee, and also those of the Select Committee. Good morning, officials from both houses. I want to greet you this morning, the Office of the Auditor General. You are most welcome. We are looking forward to your presentation this morning. The Department of Higher Education is here. This is about the department. In any case, you are also welcome. I suggest that we observe a moment of silence, prayer, and meditation. On behalf of both committees, before maybe one passes a word of welcome, it would be proper for us to introduce ourselves because we don't know one another that much because we've never really sat together before. I'm Honorable Zwane, the chairperson of Select Committee on Education and Recreation in the National Council of Provinces. With me here is my counterpart in the National Assembly, Honorable September, who is the chairperson of the portfolio from the side of the National Assembly. I will then allow members to introduce themselves, starting from the front row, going that way and towards the back that way. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My name is Ntatine Frida, member of the committee.
My name is Benny Kitana, member of the committee.
I'm Joanna Elvin, PC, Higher Education.
My name is Tomata, Higher Education Engineer.
Mr. Preston, Member of Higher Education Committee.
Congratulations.
Good morning. My name is Peter Sabra. I'm presenting my first aid and the member of the Select Committee on Higher Education.
I would then request the department and officials present to introduce themselves.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, members, dear Mr. Reddy, CFO, Department of Higher Education and Training.
Good morning, my name is Brian Kuba. Good morning, Honourable Chair, members and colleagues. I'm Sulile Christopher Musheshan Baro, responsible for skills development at the Department of Higher Education.
The Office of the Auditor General.
Good morning, Honourable Members. I'm Simon Lemas. I'm the Senior Senator for the Court of the Auditor General of the Auditor General.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Yoshua Ndouma. I'm with the Parliamentary Society of Australia.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Joshua Pazanti, Senior Manager of the Auditor General, responsible for the application.
Thank you. Support staff of Parliament. Starting at the front.
My name is Andy Kanye.
Good morning. My name is Marita Mutaka. I'm the Committee Secretary for the Select Committee.
Good morning, Linda Zukovne, Clear Advisor, Select Committee on Education and Education. Thank you.
I'm going to
Good morning, everyone. My name is Kofi Lankai. I'm the Coordinator of Select Committee on Education and Education.
Yes, Lynn.
Good morning, members. You can also give my name. I'm a representative of the Select Committee. Thank you.
Good morning, my name is Farah from the Board Committee.
Okay. There are people at the back there. I don't know who they are. Maybe it's time for you to introduce yourself.
Good morning, my name is Tasha, I'm from BNJ. Thank you. Good morning, my
name is Corrigid, I'm from BNJ. Good morning, I'm from the Auditor General of the Office of Provincial Office of Housing and Stable Labor Management.
I'm from the Community Management Department of the Office of Housing. Thank you very much. I think we've all covered the introduction of honourable member that has just joined us. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you very much, good morning everyone. My apologies to the Honourable Chairperson Mohammed from another meeting. My name is Vivian Shuri. I'm the member of this committee from the SOP. Thank you very much for that too.
Thank you. Let me take this opportunity to welcome all the honored members present and emphasize the fact that it will be important for us to work harmoniously together, considering the fact that it is just the first time this Parliament, the Fifth Parliament, for the NCOP Select Committee and the LA Portfolio Committee to work together. The two committees are complementary. They've got mandates that are distinctly different, but they're also interrelated. I think it was the wisdom of Parliament to ensure that whenever our businesses, as the two houses, are common, we come together, because then we share expertise. We save on time, we save also on resources, because we are working for the same constituency, clearly, though we are in different houses with different mandates, but the constituency is the same, co-chairperson. You are most welcome, we'll be free to engage with the presentation of the Auditor General. We all understand that it is a very important office. that is there to ensure that the finances that were actually passed to be used by the departments are handled in a manner that is acceptable in terms of the laws, the rules and regulations that govern the management thereof. Before we continue, it will be important to note the apologies that we have today. Honorable Chairperson, I've got an apology from Honorable Stock of the Select Committee. I've got an apology also of Honorable Dlamini that is going to be joining this committee a bit late. Those are the apologies that I have with me. I just know from the part of the AA.
Chairperson, with your permission, on the NA side, Honorable Kim got the bereavement, and Honorable Kabisa is also not here.
Thank you, Chair. I'm reminded that Honorable Mamburu is away on international business. So we are noting those apologies. Thank you very much. We are going to be having a briefing by the Office of the Auditor General. I've already said that they are a very important office. And we are going to be listening to the presentation with a view to ensuring or determining or discerning whether the budget that was entrusted to the Department of Higher Education and Training has actually done what it was supposed to do, and whether the operations were within the legal framework given to the department. We know that the department has got various programs that we are going to be looking into, as well as the entities that are attached to the department. They've got administration, they've got HRD planning and monitoring and coordination, they've got university education, they've got vocational and continuing education and training, and they've got skills development. Of the government outcomes, the 14 government outcomes are responsible for outcome number 5, which is about a capable workforce to support an inclusive growth path. We are going therefore to determine whether in this program they've been able to meet the targets related to the performance, and whether the information that they've actually forwarded to the office has assisted the Office of the Auditor General to formulate an opinion regarding how they've expanded. I am not going to belabor the point. I think at this point in time, I'm going to allow the Office of the Auditor General to give us the presentation. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. My presentation, I'll be taking go through the presentation, but I think I'll be going through the slides. I just want to go through the slides last week. If you don't have, I'll use the projector at the same time. The first slide in our presentation is basically our recitation from it. It says, Auditor General as a supreme institution, we exist to strengthen our country democracy by enabling oversight, accountability and governance in the public sector through auditing, thereby building public confidence. One of the ways that we build public confidence is, I think it's much better for us to explain our role in the being people are forces. This is basically to reflect on the work that we've done, so that we can assist the committee, the joint committee, to meet oversight for in assessing the performance of all the instances.
Sorry, but in fact, I'm not actually speaking to the mic. You're not hearing me.
Okay.
You're not very well.
Thank Thank you, Member. I think what I was trying to explain is just our role in terms of the B4R process. And our main role in this B4R to the Joint Committee to reflect on the good work that we performed for the 2016 year. So I think the Joint Committee in its oversight role in assessing the performance of the entities within the portfolio. And taking into consideration of the objectives that you would have to achieve through this particular process. Through the course of our audit, we examined three areas of audit. We look at the financial statements, we look at predetermined objectives, and we look at compliance with laws and regulations. When we examine the financial statements, we look to assess whether the financial statements have been fairly presented and reliable in all material respects. And with regards to predetermined objectives, we check the reliability and credibility of the performance information, which, whether it's in line with the predetermined objective of that particular institution or entity. And then with compliance with laws and regulations, we assess the compliance with the key legislation that drives the performance management of that particular entity. So I think that's what this slide is all about. So basically, our audit involves examining three areas: financial statements, predetermined objectives, and compliance with laws and regulations. Once we've evaluated those three areas, then we give an opinion. And the opinion that we give at this particular stage in time, the opinion is given on the financial statement. But we also have conclusions on predetermined objectives and findings on with regards to compliance with laws and regulations. So this particular slide here, the one that I've just projected now, is trying to explain the different opinions that we give with regards to the financial statement. The first opinion that we as auditors give on the financial statement is an unqualified opinion with no findings. And I think most recently that's the one that we commonly call the clean audit. So when we say an audit is clean, we mean that it doesn't have findings on predetermined objectives, no findings with laws, compliance with laws and regulations, as well as the produce financial statements that are free of material misstatements. And then the second opinion that we give is financially unqualified with findings. So that means the financial statements are free of material misstatements, but there could be findings on predetermined objectives or findings on compliance and laws and regulations. So that's the second kind of opinion that we express in our audit report. And then the third one is the qualified audit opinion. With the qualified opinion, there is a misstatement in the financial statement, in a particular line item of the financial statement, as well as some non-compliance with laws and regulations and predetermined objectives. And then the fourth one is the adverse opinion. The adverse opinion is basically where there are lots and lots of misstatements in the financial statement, and there's lots of disagreement between management and the auditors. Management is, in that particular situation, management is not able to provide the auditors with sufficient audit evidence to support the figures that they've reported in the financial statement. So that's the adverse opinion. So practically everything within the financial statement is misstated. All the line items in the financial statement are misstated. And they don't comply with the key legislation. And lastly, I think the worst opinion ever is the disclaimer of opinion. So in this particular kind of opinion is there's basically no evidence to support what's in the financial statement. So in that particular kind of opinion, we can't audit. Everything is not supported with any kind of sort of evidence. So that's why we call it a disclaimer of opinion, and the particular non-compliance with the legislation, there's no supporting evidence for the reported information in the annual report. So basically, those are the kind of opinions that you express having examined all the three areas that we examine at the end of it all. Then my next presentation is going to be on the audit outcome. I think my presentation is not basically focused on Department of Higher Education. Mm-hmm. It's focused on the portfolio as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically over a period of 3 years, making comparison over the 3 years, looking at the financial statement, looking at the performance information,
mm-hmm.
as well as predetermined objectives. We also look at the key controls that led to achievement of particular outcomes, as well as the key root causes and some recommendations thereof. If you look at slide 9, generally, for the year that under review, if you compare the audit outcome for the portfolio as a whole, there's been an improvement. There's been an increase in the number of audits that are receiving unqualified reports, unqualified opinion without findings. Basically, the number of clean audits over a period of 3 years, they've increased. In the current year, there were 10 entities with clean outcomes compared to 9 in the prior year. And perhaps maybe for the interest of the graphics here, the green color is for unqualified with no findings. The yellow is unqualified opinion with findings on either predetermined objectives or non-compliance with laws and regulations. And then the purple color is basically those entities that received a qualified opinion. And then adverse, within the portfolio, there is no entity with an adverse opinion as well as a disclaimer. So on the far right of the first graphic, that's where the explanations of the colors. So if you look at the graphic, for the 2015-16 year, there were 36% of the entities received unqualified opinion with no finding, and then 50% of the entities within the portfolio received unqualified opinion with finding on legislation and pre-termed objectives, and then 11% received a qualified opinion. And perhaps maybe I'll take some time to deliberate on those 11%, because ultimately for us, we would wish to see all departments moving into the category of the green, where every entity is receiving unqualified opinion with no finding. The three entities within the portfolio that were qualified were basically Trinity Tax, it was W&R, CISA, Mining and Qualification Authority, CISA, M2A, and then lastly it was PCISA. If you compare to the prior year, in the prior year there were only two entities that received the qualification, so it was PCISA and W&R. So in the current year, it's three entities that received the qualification. So basically, in the current year, there was an addition of Mining and Qualification Authority, which is abbreviated as M2A. And if we analyze further, the main cause of those particular qualifications was on commitment and discretionary grant expenditure for all the three CISAs, which is practically the core business of those CISAs. So what we found out that they could not give us sufficient evidence to explain the amount of commitment and expenditure that they reported in the financial statements, so hence the qualification there of those particular entities. then in the graph in the middle is just an analysis of the compliance within with key legislation. For the portfolio as a whole, compliance with key legislation has improved. If you look at the graphic for 15-16, there's 46% entities, 46% of the entities didn't have findings on non-compliance with key legislation. Only 50% had findings on non-compliance. The 1% in blue is one entity that we haven't finalized the audit there of. And that entity is the National Institute for Humanities and Social Sciences. But overall, there's been a significant improvement in terms of compliance with key legislation from 13-14 to 14-15 and eventually to 15-16. And then the last graph, the graphic, the last one is basically an analysis of our predetermined objectives, where we analyze the trend over 3 year period, how the quality of performance annual report as well as the quality of performance plan, annual performance plan. Overall for the 3 year period, there hasn't been a significant improvement. If you look at the graphic, say, on the quality of performance plan, it's still the same as compared to last year. So the same entities that didn't have findings are still the same entities that didn't have findings on the annual performance plan. Similarly, on the annual performance report, to say that they're reliable, it's still the same number of entities. So in terms of predetermined objectives, there hasn't been a significant improvement in that particular area. So basically, that's what the third graph to my right is explaining on page 8 of the slide. Moving back to slide 9. Slide 9 is basically explaining the status of key controls. Status of key controls is basically those controls, if all entities have them functioning, that would cause the entities to have pain or so. Those key controls that are absent, those particular entities that are denying entities to improve in the audit opinion. Mm-hmm. And how we classify them, the key controls or the root causes thereof, we classify them in 3 areas. First, we classify them under leadership. If your leadership is proper, it's functioning well, we've got policies and processes in place, the conference management, you hold your group accountable, then that's what we're calling leadership. That we categorize those kind of key controls as leadership. And then you've got financial and performance management controls. So basically those we're talking about having the daily discipline of preparing credible and accurate information on a regular basis to support what you report at your end. So that's what, and then governance is basically we're talking about the risk assessment processes in place, the oversight committees within the department or within the entities. All those 3 areas help the performance of a particular entity to achieve a clean audit. If you look on the first graphic, there's been an improvement, general improvement in the key controls, and that perhaps explains the improvement in the audit outcome. And we're also saying, I think one of the leadership internal controls that has prevented entities in improving their audit outcome is basically lack of implementing action plans and action plans not being done on a regular basis. And we're also saying with regards to leadership, staff needs to be held accountable so that they implement action plan and they perform what they're supposed to perform. And then with financial and performance management, we're saying let's have that discipline of preparing monthly credible information to support what we report at year end. I think that's basically what we're trying to capture here in terms of the key controls. And then to the far right, we are assessing the assurance level, the is actually provided at car level. If you look at the top, we're saying only 7 inches within where we say that providers, the assurance providers provide assurance, especially with senior management. And that ties up to the key controls where we're saying all people need, all staff need to be held accountable, action plans need to be implemented, internal audits need to be functional. So we say within the portfolio, we find that the first level of assurance needs a lot of improvement. And that can only be, it needs to the leadership, internal control, status of key control as well. And in terms of accounting authority as well, we're saying accounting officers and accounting authorities, only 11 in the portfolio provide assurance, and then 15 provide some assurance, and then the last is one entity provides limited assurance. And then our assessment of executive authority also says that he provides some assurance, and practically just our assessment there will be based on the overall performance of the entire portfolio. And then our assessment of the second level of assurance providers, we find that most of the audit committees are functional and the internal audit units are effective. And we also did an assessment from the portfolio committee, you chair. And basically our assessment of the portfolio committee was based on the oversight functions that they perform. So that's why we assessed it to be a green thing. On page 11, Chairperson, remember we said we express opinion on, we examine three areas. So on page 11, we're trying to break down the area that relates to compliance with key legislation. On the far right, on the far left, is the main, sorry, I'm presenting from here on my slides, I think, the one that I brought is missing, got an error that the software slide is missing, but it's on the printed out version.
Okay, honourable members will have to refer to the printed version. In, for this slide, because in the screen it's not shown. Yes, that way. It's done. You can continue.
On page 11, we're trying to explain within the portfolio what's the main cause of non-compliance with laws and regulations. If you look on the top right, the blue areas, the dark blue is compiled is 2015-16 and the lighter blue is 14-15. So most of the non-compliance within the portfolio, most of the entities that are non-compliant with the legislation predominantly relates to two areas. It relates to non-compliance with supply chain regulation, and secondly is material misstatements in the financial statements that they submit for audit. So those are the two areas. So we're trying to break down and say how many, in terms of percentages, how many entities had issues or material misstatements or limitations to the financial statement. So if you compare 15-16, you find that 41% of the entities within the portfolio had material misstatement, non-compliance due to the financial statement that they submitted. And compared to last year, it was 64. So that means there was an improvement in that particular area, but more can still be done. So there was a movement from 64% to 41, reduction in non-compliance within the portfolio with regards to the quality of financial statement submitted. And And then in the second one, the second non-compliance, as I explained, relates to supply chain or procurement management. And within the portfolio, in the current year, 22% of the entities had non-compliance with procurement management. And then that, compared to last year, which was 18%, so there was a regression in this particular area. More entities had a non-compliance with due to procurement management or supply chain management. There was also non-compliance with irregular expenditure. In the current year, it showed 22%. In the prior year, was 7%. And this non-compliance, I think, predominantly with regard to irregular expenditure, relates to basically the irregular expenditure within the department is within the procurement department is predominantly made up of two entities that contributed to that particular increase: National Skills Fund and SAPSITA. Those are the two entities that had the huge bulk of irregular expenditure within the portfolio. And then one entity had a non-compliance due to revenue management, and that NASFAS, and that arose because of the inability to collect the amounts that are due from the former students. So the figure 2 within the same page goes further to break down and say, within the non-compliance, the supply chain management, what were the issues? So the issues here were, the first one was uncompetitive or unfair procurement processes. If you compare the dark blue color for 15-16, it's 22%. Compared to last year, 19%. So basically, there's also a regression in that particular area. And the prior year, it was in 14-13, it was 30%. Similarly, inadequate supply chain controls, we had 7% increment in the current year compared to 4% in the prior year. Non-compliance with regard to inadequate contract management, it was a 4% compared to 7% in last year. And then for the current year, we didn't have any issues on awards made to close family members. Then figure 3, basically on the far right, is trying to explain the first figure to say the qualification areas for the past 3 years. Remember, in my own opening remarks, I said there were three entities that were qualified. Those three entities, the areas that led to the qualification on those two particular, or the three particular entities, it was other disclosure items, and those other disclosure items predominantly is made up of commitments for those three sectors. Expenditure, which is also made up of discretionary grant expenditure. And then liability management, basically, that one relates to one entity, which is PCSA. Then figure 4 is basically making an analysis to say if entities are not corrected the financials that they submitted on 31st, the percentages of entities that would have received a qualification. So outcome is not corrected. 41% of the entities would have been qualified. And then outcome after correction, only 11%, so only 3 entities survived the qualification. Although they tried to correct, but they couldn't support the financial statement. So it's just making a comparison between last year to this year, that if there was no opportunity to correct misstatements identified by the auditors, then these are the numbers of entities that would have been qualified. So the first two diagrams represent 15-16 and the one below is 14-15. And then on page 4, it's basically a breakdown of and quantification of the irregular, unauthorized, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. In terms of irregular expenditure, as I explained earlier, for the current year, irregular expenditure for the portfolio, if we sum up all the irregular expenditure within the portfolio of all the entities, it comes up to 569 million. course, 19 entities contributed to that particular amount, but although the amount looks bigger, but the main contributor to that figure is predominantly two entities. That FISA and National Skills Fund. And then last year, the radio expenditure was 351. So if you compare over a period of 2 years, the radio expenditure within the portfolio has significantly increased. On the fruitless and waste school expenditure, in the prior year, fruitless and waste school expenditure was 27 million, but in the current year, it reduced to 2 million, and that 2 million also relates to SAS-FISA as the biggest contributor. There was no unauthorized expenditure within the portfolio. And then the last graph to my right, on the right of the slide, is investigation of unauthorized, irregular, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So when we analyze all the entities who have incurred irregular expenditure, so we analyze to find out whether there is investigation of those particular irregular expenditure or fruitless and wasteful. So we noted for the current year, all those irregular expenditure are being investigated by the related entities to determine the root cause of those particular irregular expenditure incurred. Then on page 13, or page 14, sorry. Page 14 is basically we are explaining the three key root causes of this particular finding that came up during our audit. And we are analyzing the root causes for my paragraph is over a period of 2 years. And we found that the main contributor or main root causes across the entities is slow response by management to act on the action plan or to draw up and implement action plan to address audit findings. So that's the key root causes for most of the entities. We also found that the other key root cause is lack of consequence management for poor performance and transgression across the entities. And then lastly, in some entities as well, the one that led to non-performance or the findings that we came across was instability with regards to vacancies in key positions. So, and then here we're saying management should drop action plans and implement those action plans to address both our findings as well as internal audit findings, and the roles of every staff member should be clearly be communicated so that they actually know exactly what they're supposed to do in terms of implementing proper account controls. And we're saying that the internal audit as well help with assessment of the internal controls or the action plans that management is trying to implement. And then with regards to lack of consequence management and transgression, we think later performance management within the entities be strengthened so that all the transgressors or poor performers are dealt with or they manage properly in terms of their performance contracts. And then all the unfunded or vacant positions should be filled out. And then in the middle of the we just trying to explain the status of the commitment that the minister has made in first week to improve the audit outcome. Through our analysis, we found that the commitments that they made, some of them were implemented, but there were still more in progress to bring out the desired outcome of a clean audit. So we'll follow up on those particular commitments during the course of the next audit to ensure how effective they've been. And then lastly, the last box is basically it's our proposed commitment through you, Chair, to the audit committee in terms of in order for the entities to hold the entities accountable in your oversight function, these are the proposed commitments to the portfolio, to the committee, joint committee, to ensure that when entities come here, these are the things that you need to ask them on a regular basis to address all the three root causes. The first one on slow response by management is, I think, to request the entities feedback on implementation and progress of action plans to address all its findings during the quarterly reporting to you. The entities should give you feedback on the progress with regards to the key controls, as well as get some assurance from our the internal audit and audit committees of those particular entities, the progress there of with regards to implementation of action plans. And then with regards to lack of conscious management for poor performance and transgression, we're proposing for you to request a list of actions that has been taken for poor performers as well as transgressors. We just follow up on a regular basis when the entities come to report to you on a quarterly basis. And lastly, with the issue regarding the instability of vacancies and key positions, I think we just report back from the entities the actions that entities have taken to fill up all the vacant positions and performing their role. So, and I think the other one is just say, just what you do on a quarterly basis, just to say the achievement of things that have been reported in the APC and the impact thereof of all the entities and departments within the portfolio. Chairperson, I think right now I'll go to the outcomes that I was discussing now were for the department and each entity excluding TVET and university. So now, for the next two slides, I'll take you through the audit outcomes of TVET over a period of 3 years, as well as lastly the university. Currently now, as we stand, we as AGSA, we're auditing 30 TVET, and in the coming year, we hope to take over the remaining 20. So in the coming years, next year, we'll be auditing 50 TVET. So our analysis is based on audit outcomes that we audit as the Auditor General, as well as the audit outcomes that are not audited by us. So on page 16, if you look at page 16, over a period of 3 years, you see the bulk of the TVET for the current year, they lie in the purple, they lie in the yellow, purple, and in fact, purple, red, and blue area. So basically, 20% of the TVET that we audited, 20% of the 30 TVET, they received a qualified opinion for the current year. And there's 1% received an adverse, and then 34%, which is 10 TVET, received a disclaimer. And then 6%. They still, the audit of those particular ones are still outstanding. So the picture for the TVET as it looks now is not looking good, and predominantly the reason for these bad audit outcomes is they don't have proper record management and they don't have enough staff with the required financial skills to prepare financial information across the TVET. That's what you picked up across. And then on the next page 17, basically still the same, but at least the 30% of the French audit received a clean audit, and 45%, so that which is 9% of the 20, that haven't been audited, and 15% are still in the yellow area. In the coming year, we'll be able to make a full analysis of the entire picture since we have taken over the audit ourselves. Then, lastly, Chair, the last slide is on page 19. It's showing an analysis of the university audit outcomes over a period of 3 years. And you can see, over the past 3 years, the number of universities receiving clean audits has been reducing. For last year it was 68%, this year it's 53%. And I think the main contributor to regression in the number of clean audits for universities, basically the policies that were introduced that universities also need to comply with supply chain regulation as well as regulations regards to fixed standard objectives. So because it's been introduced in the past year or so, so that led to a regression in the audit outcomes for the university. Chairperson, I think I'll stop here in regards to the analysis there, or then I'll go for questions.
Thank you very much. Auditor General, honorable member at the back, honorable Pisoli or Pasoli, forgive me for mispronunciation of your surname. Yes. Yes, you are going to be number one, followed by honorable Kasim, honorable Siwena, and then honorable and Unkadimeng. Okay. And then I'll go that side that way again. Honorable Kaula, Damin, Samka, Mshodi, then Kilian. But in that order, those are the hands that I saw. If I didn't mention your surname, please raise your hand once again. But you'll have an opportunity to ask the question in any case. Over to you, Honorable Pisoli.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, we have 100 entities, I think, in higher education, okay? By far the biggest and most complex portfolio in the entire system. And yet we have a very short, and if I may say so, quite superficial report on the audit outcome. It is very disturbing, for example, that all the colleges, audited by the Auditor General, we get 2 pages of comments on it. And much more on the thesis, maybe a more detailed thing on the thesis. And there are the universities, which I kind of stand on, not audited by the Auditor General, that's part of their independence. Nevertheless, we get a very superficial report on them as well. And what we should actually be receiving is an individual report on each end. I understand that this would be a lot of work for the committee, but I presume such reports exist. And where you have this percentage of entities that are qualified or below, it is quite shocking actually that we are not being properly used. And then my second point is, the Auditor General seems to act as a sort of a nanny to these organizations, because it helps them fix up their reports when they are bad. So you see a move from 56% qualified up to 36% unqualified up to 93% unqualified after correction. So what does that mean, after correction? Again, we don't really know, and we don't really know whether that's going to occur again next year, and whether this is simply a sign of absolute failure in the entities and the Auditor General sort of nannying them along into some sort of success. The 569 million up by more than double over the last 3 years in irregular expenditure in the CETA and the National Skills Fund. It seems to be in one CETA and the National Skills Fund. However, those are organizations in the billions. The National Skills Fund is a 3 billion rand organization. This level of irregular expenditure, again, we simply get a little superficial mention of it, but but with absolutely no detail. So my concluding point is, it seems that we need as a committee, and I understand it's hard work, but it's the biggest portfolio, as I say, we need to meet with each organization, with any audit below qualified. And we need to hear from the auditor general in more detail what is actually going wrong in these organizations. We can't just let this go on. Money is short in the system, and here money is being wasted, it's being badly spent, it's being badly managed, and we as a portfolio committee have a duty to try and understand why and what can be done about it, and to call these entities to account in a much more specific way. And I'm obviously referring to our portfolio committee in this respect. I'm not sure if this is a joint issue, but you know, that is the committee I belong to. Thank you.
Thank you. Over to you, Honourable Member.
Thank you, Chair. Just in connection with what some members of this said, and sometimes the reports that we receive from the Auditor General, the manner in which it's presented, not from just, give an example, previously when the Auditor General came to us last year, the manner in which it was presented would tell us exactly which entities, exactly, tabulated by it, which entities are those entities with unqualified audit opinions, and then still break it down into exactly where the issue is, whether it is around compliance, whether it is around issues in terms of the annual performance plans and annual performance reports, etc. and so forth. Right now, we see there's 19 entities here, or there's 11 entities there, and there's these entities here. We don't know who they are. And we don't, it gets mentioned in some areas to say, well, there's this PC does, or there's the National Skills Fund and the FASI does. But by and large, we can't get a proper picture of where the problem areas are, and there are many problem areas. I know that you did try to highlight some of the most severe, but there are many, many problem areas. It doesn't mean the other, those other entities do not require further inspection by the legislature. The second point is that the Department of Higher Education and Training needs to be held accountable in this instance. Give me an example. Year after year, we speak about the issues as it pertains to annual performance plans and annual performance reports. Because every time we get an annual performance report, the same problems in terms of whether objectives are measurable, whether they are specific SMART criteria, etc., are raised time and time again. And as a committee, we sit and we say the same things time and time again. And there seems to be little to no improvement in that area. So how are we supposed to, how does the department suppose to ensure that there is value out of the entities of the department, if even the targets that they are setting are not measurable, are not specific, and even the reports that they are tabling cannot be relied on for many of the entities. And from what I've read in the Auditor General's report, it's as if the department itself is not geared towards proper monitoring, evaluation, and intervention in this regard. And I wonder, Chairperson, or claim Chairperson, whether or not this is by design. We need to look at exactly why the right capacity is not there, because there are many entities where the department should be playing a role with the entities to ensure that these kind of outcomes are not produced. And if there's no improvement, and if the Auditor General themselves are saying that the department is actually not geared, they don't have the right type of capacity and skills to be able to do what is required to play that role, why is that the case and why it has not been amended? Because ultimately, it's the department that is responsible for the entities. So we daren't go into the entities themselves, but if the department is not playing its own role, these issues are going to end up becoming perpetual issues going forward. So there's a number of specific questions that I can ask the chairperson, but that's also only from what is apparent over here. My suggestion is that we get a better picture. This is clearly a problem that is repeating itself. Sometimes we are told in some areas over a 3-year period there's a little bit of improvement, but if we look at from last year to this year, there's actually a regression. And I think that's worrying. So we'd like to get a better picture. My suggestion would be that we get a better, more detailed picture and a better, make, have it better presented to us so that we know exactly which are the entities by name tabulated for us in each and every area and so forth and so on. And I would like the department to be able to also report as to exactly what type of role they have played in order to ensure that these kinds of problems are not fixed going forward or are fixed going forward.
Honourable Member.
Chairperson, thank you. And thank you for the presentation. What you have identified as the three causes of poor audit outcome, and what you comment, how that should be dealt with, is not entirely new. And in fact, you are actually repeating what you have said previously. Regression is slow response and management, and more seriously, lack of consequence for poor performance and transgression is played before us again. Does this mean that your ability and performance in influencing the department to achieve a better outcome is having no impact? Or perhaps are we sitting with a work ethic that refuses to self-correct? The other issue that I would like to raise is with regard to SACETA. Now, SACETA has been a serial offender when it comes to irregular expenditure, reckless and wasteful. The SACETA, as you all know, has been under administration. What is, in your opinion, of what the opinion of the IG on whether the administrator had managed to put effective system and internal controls in place to address issues that you consistently raise? The first question would be, how comparable are the audits by the colleges who were audited for the first time in 2015-16 versus those who were audited for the second and third time? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honourable.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And thanks for the presentation. Let me first start by commending those entities that have done very well, that's called the Green Audit. And my question on the Auditor General is, with regard to the risk areas, there is real concern in the quality of submitted performance reports. And the root causes are outlined, but alarmingly the lack of consequences for poor performance and transgression is listed as the main reason, which in the financial year under review has in fact worsened. What, in your opinion, are the reasons for this? In your discussion with the DHEAD, are you confident that remedial action is being taken to address this? And lastly, where should oversight be strengthened by the Portfolio Committee to address this weakness? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Member Mbatha. Okay, yes, Honourable Member, can you continue, Honourable Mbatha? Can you continue? What is? Oh, okay, okay, we'll wait for your turn then. We'll wait for your turn. Thank you. Honourable Paul.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, EC, for your report. Some of the issues have been covered, Chair. Just want to understand the rationale on slide 9, chapter 10, for the AG about some invention of the performance of the portfolio committee, and to why only the portfolio committee, why not for the portfolio committee and the next committee. Next slide, slide number 11. The percentage that you give us there on the left, for thermal management, 32% and 18%. What has happened to the other percentages that disappeared? I'm not with the figures, but I was told that
Honourable Jamil.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. The Minister is welcoming the report from the office of the AG. But started by saying, even though one understands that it might be difficult to give a detailed report, but it would have assisted to know the picture of an entity or an institution, unlike the summary that you are getting, but it does assist. But also, coupled with this comment, it will also be assisting to have a performance report other than getting financial report alone, because it might be misleading a clean audit to good performance or changing the lives of the people out there, yet it means something else, means good reporting and following processes. Having said that, Chairperson, my first question is with regard to
the 360 million between CETA and the National Student Fund combined. That is said either in contravention of the free legislation or following proper processes. This reflects a deterioration over the previous financial year. It's why. This is not a new phenomenon, as I said, and we have experienced it before. What we want to know, I know I'm not asking you, I'm asking through you, the department concerned. Why is it happening? Why does it continue to happen? In your opinion, why do you think it continues to happen? And in your management letter to the department, what have you recommended to the department? The second follow-up, a second question on that main question is that if there has been violation of the PFMA, is there any evidence of corrective action being taken by the department? Again, that one is to the department. And then, if not, what would you recommend to us? Report follow committee and select committee. What do you recommend that we do? I know you've made general statements, but now I'm talking about this specific issue. What would you recommend that we do as parliament? The second question is on the TVET. Key in the audit outcome of the TVET policies are the serious findings on the adherence of this assessment. Given that this is a matter on which there is clear guidance, what are the issues, in your opinion, of the ongoing inability to master core functions of financial management, which leads to the AG to state that intervention is required? Those are my two questions, Chairperson, with sub-questions coming.
Thank you, Honorable Dlamini. Honorable Mshwedi.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Let me also thank for the presentation, Honorable Chair. Given the strict guidelines that underpin internal audit, the concern must be that there has been regression over the previous financial year. What are the reasons for this? And has it impacted negatively on the overall financial performance of the Department of Higher Education? Secondly, Honorable Chairperson, what were your proposals to Department of Higher Education and Training? Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. That is the only two questions.
Thank you very much, Coach. What's the general representative? I just want to clarity on your first explanation. Page 8. You are indicating that in particular one of the first as for what was the
are giving organization by organization, which clearly confirms the request by another broadcasting that maybe it would be better if we just know all of them. Because in any case, their growth inherently in them, all the signs, for example, you indicate here on the same page 8 that compliance issues, there seems to be the big problem there. And also in performance planning and reporting, there seems to be a big problem. Now, we as oversight, we're not going to be able to be always on the watch when they come and present to us, because they present these details in such a fashion that they are well trained. They immediately, in a well sophisticated way, they immediately put these ways in a manner that we will not be able to check the way we have done it. So help us to help ourselves. Tell us exactly who did what. And why they did that in your own, what was supposed to have been done? Because when you say somebody did not provide you with sufficient information and as such to you that's a cause for an advert. Now, Honorable Kaunda here comes up with another fact that when you assist them to find that information, is it the correct information? Is it not an information that has been seeked and assisted? Which means it's not an information that is falsified to enable you to be convinced. And also one of the things I've discovered in my previous experience, you were the tendency of sending junior staff in some of these entities. So the possibility of cohesion, I'm not saying you are being coerced, I'm saying the possibility of cohesion exists even in your own life. So we know what is expected in the portfolio committee and the select committee. But you have to tell us what is it that they've done wrong. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Mpambo Sibowe. Honourable Kile.
Thank you, Chair. I had not raised my hand.
Let me take. No. You'll come at the end because your hand was ready. Let us be fair.
Thank you for okay, that. I will be
honest. Honourable Kile. And then Honourable Samka. Okay. Then Hudson.
Thank you, Chair. This was first of all, I want to express my gratitude to the Office of the Auditor General. I do believe that the additional notes, briefing notes, that accompanied the slide actually assist us greatly. Secondly, I believe the Office is also, gave the committee, the portfolio committee, its specific role to fulfill, and I would like to refer to that on slide 40. We think that listed all, and I can't calculate what we expect that we should make part of our program running forward. Secondly, just by way of comment, I hear what some of the members have said, but I do believe that we can obtain the details through the department. I believe there are management records that he issued to all entities. And obviously that is in our interest to look at the detail, to see, in the words of Abu Mbata, to know exactly who did what and who didn't do what. And I would now like to go to my question number one. And that relates to a very serious concern that I have as part of the key section. If we look at the relevant slide, 11 and 12, it really spells a dismal picture. Not 11 and 12. I want to correct myself. Um, that outstanding audit is the latest way to escape scrutiny, financial scrutiny. Because in the previous, on slide 17, there was such a phenomenon, but it certainly increased. Similarly, from 14 to 15, it has increased this year. Again, five more of them have not reported on their finances. Now, if we read that together with a note at the bottom by the Auditor General, that colleges are not required to report on their performance against predetermined objectives, that's one thing, and secondly, that they are not subject to procurement requirements of the CFMA Treasury Regulation. Now, Honourable Chair, that is a very, very serious issue. Has that been reported on in the past? Has that been reported to the department? Who, which entity is supposed to close that gap? Or should we, as members of Parliament, accept the responsibility that we will have to meet with the relevant committee to say, here's a major gap in the PFMA. How on earth is it possible that entities who derive money from the public purse don't have to account, one, on performance, and secondly, they're not subject to supply chain management? That is a very serious gap. That is. And I would like to know if the Auditor General has reported that in the past and, you know, has been said, are you aware of any steps that have been taken? Secondly, I would like to go to the issue of consequence management. Now, that was a recurring message when we had the Auditor General for our telecommunications committee yesterday. No consequence. Yes? If no consequence is taken on serious transgression, we can expect more transgression of more legislation. It's as simple as that. If we look at the PFMA, it is very onerous. I mean, also accounting authorities such as CETA have very onerous responsibilities and divisions. My question to the Auditor General, are you aware of any action taken in terms of Section 86 of the PFMA, offences and penalties, on any of the subsections, which refers to accounting officers as well as accounting authorities? And obviously, the accounting officers relate to some entity, and where we have boards, it relates to the accounting authority. Now, are you aware of any such criminal charges made for financial mismanagement, transgressions, etc.? If I look at the amounts at play, and especially the increased irregular, fruitful and wasteful expenditure, that's really a very, very disconcerting. 569 million by 1980. The time has come that we must cease criminal charges. Yes, there is a room, there is space for disciplinary action, but my concern is disciplinary action often results in some other reprimand or it falls flat because there were not due processes. Is the Auditor General aware of any criminal charges made in terms of Section 8?
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Sanka.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Let me join my colleagues by welcoming the presentation by the Office of the Commissioner. Chairperson, with regard to the legislative compliance, the findings of the Office of the Auditor General in the management of strategic planning and performance indicate that intervention is required, but more concerning is the fact that there has not been positive progress
how to build us financially in this regard. What is the opinion of the AGs, the underlying causes of this, and in which specific areas could oversight be improved? Thank you, Honourable Chairperson.
Thank you. Honourable Hassan.
Thank you, Chair. Looking into the complexity, as was referred to earlier, of what we have here, and also with comments that, yes, we can certainly get management letters or even statements from the individual entities, it's very difficult. We don't even know where to start, because there's no list of indicating the performances of the different entities. Making it very difficult. I can say actually, if we look at the complexity that we are actually looking at that, an executive summary of an executive summary. Very, very difficult to get into depth. But I think that many of the things, I want to perhaps refer you to the in the annual report page 208, which actually addresses leadership and the deficiencies in leadership, which I think has become very generic throughout many departments. Consequence management was also there, but there are key words there. Sufficient controls were not implemented by parties. Now this is cross-cutting because of the format. Every entity, universities, department, every entity. Management did not always develop action plans that were sufficient to address prior year reported internal control deficiencies. This is generic. Every department performs every year. There was inadequate consequent management by the Director General and the DDG. There were insufficient internal controls, policies and procedures to ensure that the disclosure notes to the financial statements were accurate, etc. The department was unable to perform all the required verification and monitoring functions. This is generic, appearing year after year. And yes, it was put on the slide that there was a commitment by the minister to address the deficiencies, but that is also very generic. So, I think to address the deep-cutting deficiencies that were highlighted here, and yes, we must agree that there is some regression we look at last year. We have to look at leadership and the deficiencies is leadership, in leadership, because this is happening year after year after year, and perhaps leadership is a bit untouchable, and we are not really getting to the consequences for leadership in not providing the required leadership to address even the previous year's deficiencies. I would like to get some comments on that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honourable Pampas Kowai.
Thank you, Chairperson. My Chairperson is to comment on the instability on vacancies and chief position. I would like to know if the Auditor General had any recommendations or any intervention in alerting Department of Higher Education and Training about what impact this would have and what consequences would this have on the institution. Secondly, I would like to know what recommendations would he give in terms of the upcoming year, in terms of filling the vacancies and the time frames aligned to that. Thank you.
Wonderful. Then, yeah. Oh, what's up with the card?
Well, I just want to find out from you, Tech and how much we, say, for example, take universities, how in one way do you think that performs? Because financial matters relate to performance. can we say that about 80% well or 100%, or what would you give them as a percentage we should be looking at all of their total performance? And this is important because it relates to what another member asked, that these institutions are the home of knowledge for the whole country. They are supposed to produce chartered accountants, managers, directors, leadership for the whole country. So, in fact, if they are not performing well, are we saying all the other personal human capital that continue to produce for the country is not well because charity is successful? Just as you generally would interpret what is happening, take universities to start with. Because all of this has implications for our society and to the general performance of the economy of the country. So how do you relate what you have audited as regards the output that is going to be there to the whole society? And maybe you can also, like people have been advise what firm and very decisive actions can we take to corruption. Because we can't carry on with a country that is failing simply because the source of good performance is not well managed.
Thank you, Honorable Chairman. Honorable Co-Chairperson. Thank you for the opportunity, Co-Chair. Maybe the Auditor General needs to help us with the following also. And that is for the committee to satisfy itself. The committee will express itself on the basis of what is before them or not before them. And I think what would help if you could assist us in your own opinion to relay to us what is your view about the reliability of the information that you are receiving, especially that from, in this instance, from the department when you undertake the audit process. I think that a lot of the concerns that has been raised by members, we might have to take a view that we should engage with the standing committee, the audit standing committee, because if there are repetitiveness and Parliament are not being provided with other than a repeat, what is the way forward? And I think our trust must be in the Audit Committee of Parliament to have a conversation as a committee with them also, who does have oversight in this instance on the Auditor General. But I think more than that, if I speak about the colleges, and we hear the concerns that you are raising and so on, and many have been saying it's not a new phenomena, it's a repeat, and so on. I think for us the question is, from the Auditor General's office, what are we chasing? Are we chasing qualified audits, clean audits, and sacrifice on the altar service delivery and the impact thereof, or are we having a sort of, you know, practical approach of what does the law say on how audits need to be done, and how does that relate to what Parliament requires in this instance? So so does it suggest that the recommendations that, that you bring, you know, from your financial year, and this is year on year, are having any impact or any or little impact? Now, if that is the case, you have to tell us what the reasons are for that, and walk us through what, in your view, then needs to be done. Because we appreciate the colors that you bring to us. We appreciate that you say they're moving to another block and all of that. But I think that for us, we link the two together. If the outcome is in a particular way, then surely it must have a knock-on effect elsewhere. Now, which one, if you weigh the scales, which one is up there and which one is starting to go down now, or at which point are you going to allow the scale to be even? Or is the Auditor General starting to tip the scale? And if you do, then in which favour are you tipping the scale? So I think that, Chairperson, let me leave it there for questions now.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got just a couple of questions to add, one or two. I get to the sense that the department and the entities, if I'm correct, correct me if I'm wrong, when they submit misstatements, they get given an opportunity to go and correct and resubmit. Now my question is, why do they submit misstatements? Do you question them in terms of why do they submit misstatements in the first instance? Why do they have to be given an opportunity to go and correct and resubmit? Because I think those people that are working on the books are qualified. They should be able to submit correct documentation the first time around. The other issue, and also whether that is as a result of negligence, or is there some deeper reasons why they do that. And then the other issue that I wanted to raise is the issue of the universities. Again, correct me if I'm wrong, but I get the sense that they're not audited by the AG. They've got other private institutions that audit their books. But when you present a report, you present a report based on the opinions of those bodies. And how far sure are you that the information that you get is accurate and correct in order for you to be able to give a genuine opinion? And have you verified the nature of association between them and those entities or those FMs that audit their books? Do they get changed, or are they audited by one firm, even if it's 5 years or 10 years or 20 years, such that there is a relationship that gets developed? And therefore, we are not likely to get information that is authentic. Those are my two questions, Chairperson. And is it ethical for them to do that in any case? Thank you. I hand over to you to respond to questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Member, for questions. We'll try to answer as much as we can based on the question. I think we've made some notes here, and whatever I don't get to, my colleague team will help me with. I think most of the questions were cost-cutting, but I think I'll start from Honorable Bodoli's question, and then perhaps to, when I'm responding to, address some of the questions that we have previously. I think the one thing with the first question that she asked, and in our own tongue, her own words, she said, we asking as if we learn it to the entity.
Very sexy.
Yeah. But I think she was
figuratively speaking, she was alluding to the fact that why do we allow entities to do correctly statements once they submit a financial statement? And perhaps maybe let me just explain to say, in terms of the auditing standard, international auditing standard that we follow as well, like when a client submits information, you need to give them an opportunity to correct any misstatement. And the misstatement that we say in correction is perhaps that we allow perhaps a wrong application of an accounting standard. But we don't allow, like when I account that with a tool, a client to post file information to go and correct supporting evidence. What we allow for is correction of the wrong application or interpretation of an accounting standard. So that's permissible by the auditing standard. But in terms of the PFMA, particularly section 40 for the department and section 55 for the public entity, if the client or the entity corrects the financial statement, then that's a non-compliance. And if you revert back to the presentation that I made, I said the non-compliance for most of the entities was due to mainly non-compliance of supply chain principles as well as correction of financial statements. So I think that's the mismatch between the PFMA and the auditing standard and the accounting standard. So PFMA, if they correct, then it's a non-compliance, and that's why we report as such in the audit report. And if I go back to the presentation, that's why most of the entities are put in non-compliance with the PFMA, because PFMA says once you submit, it should be the assurance report. And the auditing standard say if there's a misstatement and a client is allowed or is permitted for them to make correction. So I think that's why it comes out. But the correction that we allow, we're not saying submit financial statement. We're saying the evidence you can't, if it's not there, it's not there. You can't recreate evidence. The misstatement that they correct relates to now wrong interpretation of accounting standard, requirement of accounting standard or reporting framework, those things that they know. In terms of the way you're supposed to account for example, lease agreement, you're supposed to do account it over a period of 4 years, but you counted it over 5 years. Then like okay, then they go back and say, okay, let me count it in terms of 5 years computing for that without reproducing the supporting document. I think in all instances, the misstatement is just a wrong interpretation by the accountant that we pick up and require them to make a correction based on the correct stipulation of the accounting standard or reporting framework. But it's not necessarily that please go look for supporting documents and correct. No, because if a transaction has occurred, and it occurred 3 months ago, there is no way you're going to go and reproduce the statement. And we won't allow that. We won't allow a client to do that. Because I think that's the issue about misstatements and why entities go back and correct misstatements. I think the second issue that arose as well is when I look at him, and perhaps most of the members, to say that perhaps our presentation was brief, not much detailed, but it's also understandable that this is the biggest department, 100 entities. It's not possible for us to come within a period of two hours and say, let's do national skills fund, let's do that, this, that. What we're presenting is basically an overall portfolio committee. And what we try to do as well, to try to give explanatory notes to our slides. But if there is more information that's required, the committee can request, because how we report, we issue an audit report, which is the summarized version of the issues that arose as a result of our audit, which is a public document. And then we also issue a management report with all the issues, detailing all the issues that came about. To say, this is the issue that we found, maybe you have issues with the assets, you have issues with your employee code, please look at this. And then we assess the majority if they are all, and then report in the audit report. So I think maybe in future as well, we'll try to expand on the explanatory notes to the slide. But if the committee requires more information, our suggestion is they can request this information from the management, from the department. Through the department, they can request the management report. They say this is the detail. Okay,
while it's still there, the chairperson wants to comment on your response.
No, I think that maybe there's a misunderstanding here. When a presentation is being made to Parliament, you bring all, even if it's 100 pages, it is within the domain of Parliament then, to see how do we process that. But we can't go elsewhere and go and ask, can you give us more, can you give us more? So I think maybe that needs to be understood from upfront.
You can continue.
Thanks, Chair. And the other issue was on the details of erosion expenses. I also was pertaining to the details on whatever. So I think, like I was saying, most of it we have included it in the explanatory notes to that. But if more information is required and perhaps more briefing for those particular entities that you require to meet you, then you can always come back and give a detailed briefing on those particular entities. I think you talked about the consistency of our presentations and everything. We'd like to look at that and make it consistent across the field and provide issues for the three examinable areas that we look at in the future presentations. And then I think some of the questions were directed to the department. I think the other two questions were more directed to the department.
Yes, on the rumba.
Sorry to interject. I just want to get a clarity on the representative of the age. If you say a question was in your own view and directed to the department, I think you must repeat the question so that the member can honorably digest that it's not belonging to you.
You can share the question also.
Mm. Okay, you
don't have to nationalize all the
answers. Yes, honorable
Pussoni. Chair, my criticism was on this report. Maybe you say next year you'll bring another. We want a better report now. We are not trying to recommend how you improve. We are trying to oversight over this department now. And we want better reports immediately. We don't want to quite allow it here. Thank you.
Honorable Zami.
Chairperson, I want to suggest that the meeting allows you to conclude the conflict. Then you allow us to do some of our studies. The manner in which you are doing the work of this conflict answers one question.
Yeah, we would allow that, we'd agree with that, but please, he must also assist us as to answer properly. Because if he does not do that, then members will interject because they are looking forward to their questions being answered adequately. So please do that for us. And you can also share the responses amongst yourselves.
Okay, Sana, I think I would think, because how I noted the question, I was not just saying in order of how they were asked, but sometimes the responses are overlapping because some of the questions were cross-cutting.
Mm-hmm.
So when we are meeting, my colleagues will come and speak up. And I'll accept your recommendation when I go back there, I'll repeat what the members asked and then just to refresh the members' questions. I think Honourable Kasim has requested in terms of what there was a question that he had directed to the department to say that how is the department holding the entities accountable with regards to the transparency of irregular expenditure. And some of the things that repetitive have been there and the meeting reporting that we've seen the same things over a period of time. The third member, sorry, of course, the neighbor member's name. But the third question was relating to root causes, and our recommendations are also similar to the issues that we have brought forward previously. And nothing new was worked here. Right? And how have we assessed the performance of the administrator at Francisca? And how can we, if we to compare the OSP for the period of 2 years on what we've audited, in terms of the OSP compare over a period of 2 years, how does this compare? Yeah, so I think maybe for the sake of nationalizing the red forces, I will give this to you.
Thank you, Chair. I think first thing I can just go back to the request for additional information. We are happy to provide additional information, Chair. I think we will try and do that as soon as possible after the commission. However, what I would like to highlight for members is the information we share with you is limited to publicly available information. So publicly available information besides information that is very important in the reports of the various institutions. So we won't be able to share with you the detail that is in the reports of the various institutions. Because unfortunately that one is a report specified for management. And once you're providing the information in terms of which auditors of what outcome, then if you require more information on that specific team, you will then be at least armed to be able to say you've got the same of opinion, can you look at the management report. Unfortunately, it's not for us to share with you what the management report of the institution contains.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
If I can then answer the question around the community college fees for city colleges that was asked in terms of the ones that we are auditing for the first time this year compared to the ones that we have been auditing in the past 2 years. The audit fees are not much different. They are quite similar. And the reason for that is most of the colleges that have been auditing for 2 years, they have not made as much progress as perhaps they could have done within those 2 years. And as such, their systems, they are not mature, or as mature as they could be. So as a result, the extent of work that you are doing on the new colleges is similar to the old colleges. And the result of that, that's why even the audit fees are still similar. So I think as the colleges mature, if the ones we've been auditing for a few years mature faster than the new colleges, then we should be able to see that differentiation. But for now, that part is good. And then if I can then also change that address again, of course, this question of universities. Again, we don't audit the universities. And like I've said, the information we share with you is limited to publicly available information. So what we share with you is what we pick up from those reports that have been produced by the university auditors. So again, if you need more information from a specific university, you need to get into the specific university. So what we're able to check is that this university was qualified. And if you need more information on why they were qualified, then you can get the
information. Honourable member?
Yes.
Can you allow him to finish, please? And I am not going to entertain dialogue. Whatever you say should be via the chair. Honourable Mbatha, let us allow him to finish, please, and then I'll come back to you. No, don't, Honourable Mbatha, please don't assist him. Leave him to complete, and then I'll come.
More trouble than we put on
No, no, let us allow him to finish, then I'll come back to you, please. Oblige. Continue.
Chair, you will avail the committee the specific opinions that each of the institutions will take. So each of the 100 institutions in the portfolio of high we will share with this one what the opinions, this one was qualified, this one was subject. That information can be given because this public information promoting support of the various institutions. So we'll do that as soon as possible after the committee and we'll give it as well. There was also a question around the Tibet College's chair in terms of their adherence to the assessment and that what is contributing to their continuing adherence of law without capture. The answer to that is the main reason for that chair is some critical deficiencies within the college still remain unfilled. Specifically, at chief financial officer level, there are still a number of policies that do not have human intelligence. So that certainly undermines then the ability of the policy to make decisions because there isn't that leadership to actually direct the activities of the administration within the policies. And second to that, Chair, we also find that in some of the policies, the finance units themselves, they do not have that good skills to actually support, effectively support the CFO. And that also undermines the ability of the colleges to institutionalize some controls that will ensure that they improve on their reporting. There was also a comment shared around the seemingly increasing trends in our student audits. It's something that we have noted, Chair, and something that also concerns us compatibly. I think what has happened is, I think the first challenge is that the deadline for submission of financial statements is not legislated. So unlike the PHMA, for instance, the financial part that institution must submit their financial statement by the 1st of May, if they do not, it becomes non-compliant with the report. With the two colleges, we do not have that situation because it is not specifically prescribed in their act, and as such, the department not ordinarily informs the college on an annual basis in terms of the circular that you must submit your financial statement by the 1st of May. But they do not always comply with that, and because of the state, they are not able to escalate and report that it is not compliant with the report. Now, the main reason, Chair, that they are not submitting the financial statement is some of them they do not have adequate systems that enable them to generate the information that is required to be able to report on the on their financial statements. So if they are able to improve those systems, then they should be able to report and input that information on time and be able to submit their financial statements on time. But at the moment they are still lagging behind some of the policies in their financial systems. Chair, there was a question on our view of how the university has performed. Mm-hmm. I think, Chair, to answer this one, I would just like to highlight that the scope of inquiries is really limited. We report on the financial statements as a credible, we report on their reporting on performance, if they're reporting credible, and we report on whether they've complied with those regulations. It is beyond our scope to say that this university is underperforming, or that university is overperforming, because it is not the scope of an audit. So that kind of exercise needs to be undertaken by specific institutions, specifically on the performance of the university, because that is not the scope of our audit. We look at financial statements, we look at the annual performance report, and we look at compliance legislation. Then there was also a question, Chair, on our opinion on the likelihood of information that we will receive. Chair, ultimately, our opinion on that information is expressed by our opinion on the financial statements. So where we have qualified the financial statements, where we have the stable financial statements, it means that we are not satisfied on the likelihood of another possibility of sixth form. And similarly, if you look at the annual performance reporting, if on the audit report, would indicate where the material findings on the reported performance information. So while we're not sure with the reliability of that information, again, your audit report will tell you. So if our audit report is silent on the qualification, there's no qualification, and also we do not have material findings on the annual performance report, then that is to say that from the work that we reviewed, we were satisfied on the credibility and reliability of the information that we received. Chair, there's also a question around the audits of the universities by private firms, how long they've been audited by private firms, and is this satisfied? Chair, if it is true that at the moment we do not audit any of the universities, many of the universities, to be honest, Chair, many of the universities have been audited by the same auditors for a long time. Some of them have changed auditors in recent years, but the majority of them, I think at least 50% have not changed their auditors in recent times. And Chair, this is not an easy one to answer in a clear-cut way, because currently there is no explicit guidance to say that you must have an auditor for 5 years, after 5 years you must have a place of it. There isn't such a requirement at the moment to the university sector. This is currently the South Institute of Chartered Accountants and Yoruba, they are exploring whether it is actually feasible to prescribe opinions after which your term must be chased. Mm-hmm. But currently that is still something that is being proposed, and this is out for comment by the general public. So that is something that will probably be concluded perhaps during the course of next year, whether we actually come to a position in terms of does the public in general, including the preparers of the financial statements as well as the users, feel that the sector would benefit from having a fiscal period after which the auditors must be changed. So I think for now I'll hand back to my colleague Joshua, and then after that I'll see what questions are here and answer the others.
Thank you, Mr. Joshua.
Thank you. I'll start off with a question from Honorable Kaunda, where he was asking about
Honorable Kaula.
Not Kaunda.
Oh, Kaula.
Kaula. You are taking him out of the country.
He asked about the percentages on slide number 11. You see, the way we've done the slides, the percentages there, or we're not making them, we're making comparisons over years, not over a single year. So the non-compliance, when you see the 22%, not necessarily, the 22% relates to 2015-16, and then the 19% relates to 15-14 in the prior year. So we're not making a comparison over a period of time. We're comparing non-compliance of entities over years. Chair, there was also a question regarding how the administrator at the CETA performing, the performance of the administrator. And we didn't evaluate per se her performance, but we evaluate the performance of the entity, which is also a reflection of her. But the issues at our mandate haven't been resolved, so that's why a lot of issues are still coming out as far as the current reporting. Chairperson, there was also a question on during the audit, have we ever encountered an instance where someone has laid criminal charges in terms of Section 86 of the PFMA? Not really. I think most of the investigations are done by forensics, and in most cases, people are either fired or they leave on their own, but we've never encountered where people have, oh, where people have each other have been made in terms of race, sexual race, you know, etc.
Okay.
Chair, there was also a question that we were intended to send in your staff to the UGT. Chair, we are a training environment. So, by the nature of our environment, we will have in your staff that needs to have experience and training to be able to qualify in terms of staff. So, it is inherent in our environment that we will have junior staff in our but what we try and do is to assign responsibilities such that the complex areas will be looked at by the more experienced staff members, whereas the less complex areas will be looked at by the junior staff members. But we cannot run away from using junior staff members in our environment. The chair also, there was a comment that there is concern that the TVET colleges are not required to report or comply with the PFMA and with PF and the reporting regulations that they don't have regular regulations. And there was a question that came with what was the situation of the department. And the answer to that chair is yes. We have brought it to the attention of the department. But I think also it's important for me to say that these were issues in both the universities and the TVET sector in Zambia. Now, on the university side, the department has made some progress because they promulgated new regulations for reporting by public education institutions in 2014, which became applicable for the universities from the 1st of January 2015. However, they have not made the same progress with the TVET colleges, and I think it's something that they do need to look at quite importantly and quite easily on their side. In terms of what is their plan regarding that side. I think also, Chair, the question of compliance with the PFMA is something that the department still needs to look at. And I think, obviously, if they're going to be incorporated, the TVET and the university to be incorporated in the PFMA, there's obviously some process that needs to be followed. That made an amendment to the legislation. So I think for now, I think it's for us to put it in the court of the department and say this is the issue and how we propose the technique going forward to make sure that the legislative framework within the chief and the government is consistent with the good expectation of what the those issues should be like to the department. Then, Chair, on the subject of information as well, I forgot to mention on our book so that we have another report as well that we produce, which we call the General Report. And in that General Report, we also find more detailed commentary on the specific institutions as well, how they perform in the respective side. So that report will be published in early November, and I think when it's published also, we'll make sure that the committee gets a copy of that report.
Okay, there are members whose hands were up. Honorable Mbatha, your hand was up and I said I will come back to you. Honorable Killian, yours was up. Honorable Kekan, Honorable Kasim, Honorable Zamini, and lastly, Honorable Swe.
Sorry, before you allow.
Oh, members, let me get the permission from you. Don't you think that we need you to take a comfort break, maybe of 10 minutes, then come back?
No.
Is that okay? Please. Okay, let us break for about 10 minutes, and then we'll come back. Thank you, Honorable members. Thank you.
Like, was having like all these guys like employing the frames, the independent people, they have to rotate body, but it doesn't feel comfortable for people to do it. I find that body is about been there like 10 years or whatever, and it doesn't feel bad. So he also has an easy feeling to work for the world to invest.
The department is since 2009. Now, before that, there was a department.
Yeah, it's just a sharing of functionality.
That's the way we're not going to get away from
I think the majority of positions, previously when it was just a department, they used to just manage the department, university, even, but it was not their responsibility, it was more the provincial government, and then university, they never used to go over there. And then with the higher education, they brought on the teachers as well.
But the Auditor General office, in the changes that have been made, obviously there needs to be some discussion of how and what are the changes that have been made to follow the changes that are the changes. Because we wouldn't want to hear that the department has been
No.
When you say displayed,
you have to explain the way things are going. No.
Thank you.
Honourable members, let us resume. I think you should have raised that earlier.
Oh,
but
yeah,
I'm going
to.
Okay. There is no transmission. The respondents are still here. They are going to cover those questions that they did not cover as they cover the follow up as well. The department is still going to respond. But the kind of issues that you wanted to raise, I thought, relate to the responses that have already given. I thought so. And please allow us to progress.
I'm sorry, Jefferson, I don't understand the direction that you've given in the chamber.
Oh, oh.
Question proposed, if you can just allow me please. Question proposed are implemented with the TPDF. Invited to this meeting, we have the AG's office, and we have the Department of Higher Education and Training. Question proposed to those that have been invited here to answer those questions. We had a first round of questions, and yet we haven't asked the department who are part of those who answer questions here to answer the questions from the first round of questions. It doesn't make sense to have those questions answered after a second round. It would be advisable, Chairperson, that they answer the questions that are posed so that in the second round we are allowed to ask follow-up questions even to the department as well. We're not only here to interrogate the Auditor General's office, we're here to interrogate the department as well because they have a mandate as to the entities that exist within the department.
Honourable Karim, please let us understand each other very well.
Well,
please wait. I just want to clarify this issue that Honourable Member is raising. When the Office of the Auditor General was giving responses, members wanted to come in at that stage to give clarity to the issues that they're not clarifying adequately. At this juncture, I am not yet taking a second round of questions, but they are still wanting to clarify some of the responses that they have already given in terms of them being adequate or inadequate. After that, then we'll get a second round of questions, then the department will be given an opportunity to respond to some of the questions. Please allow us to progress in that fashion.
My follow-up is as follows. Firstly, the whole lot of questions asked by Honourable Flattening has not been answered, all of them. Two, the reference to the questions that were directly or indirectly belonging to the department, it was the responsibility of the representative to tabulate and specify which one of them. So we will still be expected to know which one of those questions that he said were belonging to the department so that we are enabled to expect the department to answer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in my specific follow-up, sir, I did not mean that it is not advisable for AG to train. In fact, the entire state institution should be a training ground. What I mean, there is a difference between sending a trainee to an assignment associated with the value of work expected out of a trainee. And there is also a valid difference to send a trainee to a hard task
two questions. And we're trying to find a better answer for yourself. The first question was, is it not appropriate for a person to send information as a corrected request? So you were supposed to answer. And then inherent in that was, is it right to seek a corrected information? Because by the value of that information, it's subject to interpretation. And Honorable Kaula was saying he could be even flawed. So that's all.
Thank you. Honorable Smith.
One is to address the concerns expressed by some of the members with regards to adequate information on which the culprits are. I would like to propose that in some respects, if we look at the briefing notes, Lisa was listed in the briefing notes and it was also mentioned by the Office of Solicitor General. But in other cases, it was mentioned but it's not contained in the document. So if we could then ask the Office of the Auditor General, if they could provide the committee with a list of all the entities that fall into different categories. Our sort of experience in the past has been that there was a sort of a very simple, visible distinction. Those with red, and over the period maintained a red profile, and that was the culprit. Those with some progress were sort of green or yellow or something, and the others that had teal or had a green profile. And you could visibly see the regression or progress. Now, clearly, it's not necessary to go back to that extent, but it's just to have a list so that we can identify the culprit that has been repeated offenses. For us to work on them, because it's possible to oversee 100 entities in the minutest detail, but at least we should focus on those who don't do the things correctly. Secondly, Chairperson, I would like to propose that we actually finalise the briefing by the Auditor General. We have a session with the department as well, and all the questions that we want to engage the department on actually, strictly speaking, belong the session, the annual report and the performance of the department, their role to oversee entities, etc., their plan of financial statements, etc. I would like to suggest that we don't confuse the entity, because if we look at the agenda before us, there's a clear distinction between the briefing by the Auditor General and the session with the department on the annual report and the discussion about that, etc.
Thank you. Is there any other member that wants to comment on the responses? Honorable Keka.
Yes. My comment is similar to the previous one, that on universities, the Auditor General rightly so says their scope is not to report on performance. Now the point is, what we ask is for the Auditor General to report such that it is user-friendly. Remember that ultimately, the purpose of us calling for the Auditor General is to see whether this, say for example, universities are handling their values properly. Remember that there's also institutional autonomy there. And if people are asking whether you are changing they are using their own separate auditors. Well, that question is attached to the issue. They are trying to check whether the auditors that are doing their auditing there are independent, reputable. In other words, whether we, with the public, can have trust in those auditors. Now, if you say to us, it's not just a matter of whether they are changing or not, but if you give us a sense that say they are audited by reputable firms of auditors like Deloitte and Todd, you know, then at least you're giving us confidence that data repeater with auditors that they are using, that we can trust that the public in South Africa is confident in. Now, the way you answer, you just say, no, some are changing after 5 years, some are retained. They say, you see, you don't see our point. Our point is to do oversight and check whether these people who are supposed to have institutional autonomy are using money that they receive from the government or from private sector properly. So at least give us some kind of trust and confidence that things are done properly. That is the issue. Otherwise, it isn't just for you to come and report here. The purpose is for us to see whether things are done properly. Actually, I think when we get an auditing report, we should at the same time get it alongside with the performance made from the department of that particular. Because, for example, if there's a disclaimer, I'm sure that should indicate to you that something is wrong there. You can't continuously have disclaimers like Kilian is saying. At least if there's a green for disclaimer, and for green audit, there's another color that gives us an idea whether things are right or wrong. We don't just have to receive report without knowing whether things are right or wrong. And that is why we want to generalize, to guide us and say, these universities are wrong, are clean, but this is for the first time that is happening because all along they've been having disclaimers and we think there's an improvement. So report such in such a way that it gives us guidance as to what is happening out in our institutions. It mustn't just be report for auditing sake. We as laymen would also want to know whether we can sit back and say things are fine in our autonomous institutions like universities in the country, and that is what we're asking for. And actually, like I'm saying, I think there must be, the auditing report must go along with performance report so that we can link the two and see whether the country is achieving what it is supposed to achieve.
Thank you, Honorable Kekana. We are left with only about 20 minutes to conclude this session. I think the members have also expressed a concern about the scanty information that we are getting. And I think we are agreeing with my co-chairperson that we shall have to call the office of the Auditor General back with the kind of documentation or presentation that has got the detail that members are looking for. With that in mind, I will allow the remainder of the members to raise issues based on the first round of questions. And then the department will have a comment to make, and then we close the session. Go for lunch, get ready for the session for after lunch. Honorable Dami.
Thank you very much, Chair. You covered all the arguments, and they will have a comment. Worried that they can't give us information. If they can't give us, who do they want to reach that information? That you covered me when you said they will have to come back. My questions are not just only to
All right. I would request that you respond to the questions, just those that you did not respond to, very quickly. They've lost track of the question. Other members, please do remind them. those members that have got a concern that their specific questions have not been responded to. Please, just briefly, members, repeat the question. Honourable member.
Thank you, Chairman, for this opportunity. My question was, with regards to the risk areas, there is clear concern in the quality of submitted performance reports. The root causes are outlined, but alarming the lack of consequences for poor performance and transgression is listed as the main reason, which in the financial year under review has in fact worsened. Now, what, in your opinion, are the reasons for this? One. Two, in your discussion with the DHET, are you confident that remedial action is being taken to address this? And lastly, where should oversight be strengthened by the portfolio committee to address this weakness? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. You have taken note of that question. Any other honourable members got qualms about not being responded to? Honourable Kaul? What was the question? Or in the presentation? I'll respond to that one, Honourable Kaul. As to say that when I saw the documentation, I said the secretary needs to alert them to that effect, but in the presentation, at the start of their presentation, they did say portfolio committee, select committee, but in the printed document, they did not. Yes?
I'm not trying to buy something up on the The audit also audited the performance of the portfolio committee.
Oh.
The question is why was the audit the performance of the portfolio committee and leave outside the serious committee?
Oh, I know, I misunderstood you completely. Thank you very much. No, they'll answer that one. I thought you are referring to something else. Any other member that has got an answer to the question?
Yes, Chair. It was the one of the 250 million that you regard irregular expenditure. As well as the National Student Fund combined, the alarming 350 million spent in the economy of key institutions and required processes which were followed. My third question, after that one, was that this is not a new phenomenon and we have experienced that before. Why, in their opinion, is this happening, continue to occur? And the other question was that if there has been evaluation of the PFMA, are there any evidence, corrective measures or actions that have been taken based on this? And the third one was that what do they recommend to us?
Okay, let me hand over to you then to fill in the gaps.
Thanks, Chair. I'll start off with a question regarding the quality of performance report that the root cause there of why entities are not producing quality financial reports. I think predominantly the main root cause thereof is information not being verified on a regular basis, and when they compiling the annual reports, because they're not doing it on quarterly or regular basis, they are bound to make mistakes when they're making the final annual report. And because the consolidated, the process of collecting, verifying, and consolidating the performance information is not to be viewed or monitored on a regular basis, then mistakes go through at the end of the audit. And some of the indicators of the target that they're reporting, because they may not be out there, then might not even have reporting documents. I think that's one of the reasons why I can't stop. Then the questions on the regular expenditure we're carrying regarding the 350 not being a new phenomenon, and what has been done to the transgressors, and what we recommend for the portfolio committee. I think we've evaluated all the regular expenditure that we reported. We evaluated to see whether investigation is ongoing and whether the accounting authority is investigating the transgressors. And I think there's also a slide where we say all the regular expenditure reported is being investigated, is under investigation, 100% this year and the prior year. And our recommendation to the portfolio committee, I think one of the proposed commitments to the audit portfolio committee and joint committee was that for every, when entities come to account, they need to account to the instances of such transgressions and irregularities of irregular expenditure and what the entities have done. So on a regular basis, they need to give report back on those kinds of instances. And then the question about our assessment of the portfolio committee without assessing the select committee. I think most of our interactions for the past period, I think it's been mostly with it's been based with that interaction with the portfolio committee. I think that's why we assessed the portfolio committee. I think the bias was because we've attended most of the portfolio committees and we evaluated based on the attendance and seeing what the portfolio committee is doing with regards to the legislative mandate. So I think that was the only reason.
Okay, coming please.
The question around why the senior colleagues are continuing to have issues. I think I did indicate earlier that one of the main reasons was that the kids are still not fit. I said that some of the colleagues do not yet have the money CFOs, and I also said that some of the support staff within the colleges do not have the right skills to be able to adequately support the CFOs, and that is why some of the colleges are not involved in the audit accounts. And lastly, Chair, I have the opportunity, I would also like to just highlight to the honorable member that the auditors of the universities are capable of defense. So you can have that comfort. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Based on the fact that you are going to be further against the department after lunch, the issues that were supposed to be responded to by the department, in light of the fact that you have exhausted our time, it could be responded to after lunch when we do the report, the annual report of the department. The other issues that are not adequately addressed, I want to believe, Co-Chairperson, that in the next engagement with the Office of the Auditor General, you would have been able to organize yourself in such a manner that we are able to respond adequately to the issues, because I can actually see that members are not quite happy with some of the responses. It doesn't look like the office was quite ready to respond to the questions posed by Parliament. But we have decided that maybe in order to be fair to the members, you need to come back. and further engage, because you need to assist us to perform oversight, and your report is critical in terms of assisting us to do that. I want to believe that that is how we're going to go, and let me allow the chairperson to make the final remarks before we break for lunch and reorganize ourselves for the next session. Thank you. Over to you, Co-Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me concur then with your ruling that indeed there is quite a high level of dissatisfaction from the members on their engagement with the Auditor General yesterday. And in order for the members to be satisfied that indeed that we can measure even the department against the responses that we got from the Auditor General, that the committee is simply not in a position to do that. So even if you ask the department to answer everything now, that's not even going to help, because the first round is something that has not inspired us. And therefore, I would then agree with you, Chairperson, that we discuss again insofar as our program is concerned. And secondly, that we engage with the Auditor General's office ourselves to delay to the Auditor General's office about the outcome of this meeting. And that we think that exactly what it is that we would require based on what the members have said here today must be made very clear to the office, so that we don't have a situation where they're going to bring us 10 pages that were missing that were not here. I mean, we started off by having missing pages already. The screen is still at the same page, and then it couldn't go any further there. And if our oversight needs to be done properly, those that appear before us must also do that. So, Chair, I would agree with you. Let this committee make history by sending the Auditor General's office back in, and that we would engage with them again on the date that we would communicate to them.
Okay, the meeting adjourns. We'll reconvene at 2 for the second session. Thank you very much, Honourable.